Welcome to Think Like a CEO, a special series on the Elite Achievement Podcast. If you've ever been told to think like a CEO, but weren't sure what that actually means, this series is for you. We're going behind the scenes with real CEOs, leaders who've built seven and eight figure businesses to unpack the mindset shifts, leadership habits, and strategic decisions that fueled their growth. You're about to hear how real CEOs think so you can evolve your identity, elevate your leadership, and start making decisions like the CEO your business needs. At what point does a founder need to stop thinking like a business owner and start thinking like a CEO? Most people treat those roles as interchangeable. They are not. Today on Elite Achievement, I'm joined by Joseph Frost. Joe is an idea guy and a fractional futurist with a goal to build seven-figure businesses operating in parallel. He's two in and brings a unique perspective on the difference between founder-level energy and CEO leadership. In this conversation, we explore the distinctions between founders, scaling leaders, and CEO-level leaders, along with the realities of leading in fractional and remote environments. This episode offers a fresh perspective on how leadership evolves as companies grow and will expand how you think about leadership development. Welcome, Joe. I want to start with the question that I love asking all of my guests on the show. What does it mean to you to achieve elite success personally and professionally?
I think it's a great question. And I also think we don't think about it enough because we're too mired in the day-to-day. But this gave me a chance to reflect as I was preparing for this answer. And to me, it comes down to personally being able to live my values. And those start with family. But it includes things like freedom, being fearless, having confidence and creativity, and being a little bit of a nonconformist. Those are like things I value, and I feel successful when I'm able to do that, wherever I am, whenever I am. Professionally, I think it's about living my purpose through others, and my purpose I see is to create and inspire. And when I can create environments and businesses and opportunities and inspire others to be able to live their values within those ecosystems. And that's where I get most success from professionally.
How did you come up with that purpose to create and inspire?
Honestly, years of just thinking and thinking and thinking. 20 plus years ago, I remember going to hear a speaker talk about, we all need to have purpose. And ever since then, I've been trying to like define what mine was, and I come across other opportunities and other learnings and other speakers and other thoughts and readings. And it finally just simplified and connected with me very recently that it was to create and inspire.
Yeah. I appreciate you sharing that story because I think sometimes we feel this pressure to be able to clearly articulate our purpose, our mission. And I love how you shared it has taken years. So it wasn't just one simple moment, but a lot of reflecting. And in the meantime, you're still building the businesses, you're doing the work, and then it arrived.
Yeah, I think everybody that wants to find their purpose is seeking purpose is going to find variations of it along the way. And when it feels like you finally got it right, that's awesome. But then it might, you know, adjust and change as your circumstances change. So that's okay too.
For sure. Well, Joe, tell us about your businesses that allow you to live out your purpose.
Well, freedom is one of my big core values, and it's been around, and nonconformity. Those two, I think, combined together are inspirations for lots of individuals that want to become entrepreneurs. You have this sense of entrepreneurial freedom, and it's somewhat it's not necessarily a real thing that you get as an entrepreneur, but it's certainly something that drives entrepreneurs, right? We want that freedom to make our own decisions, to take our own risks, and it's hard to get that inside most corporate environments. That's what's driven me from since I was a high school student and starting my own lawn business to today running a few different businesses. It's needing that freedom. I absolutely had to have that. It was in my core. And then the nonconformity in me is what kind of also sticks out as a source of why I decided to get into entrepreneurship. I just struggled with the consistency and the conformity that's involved in many businesses, and they're not bad. It's not a bad thing. It's just, it wasn't a fit for me. And I've always had this desire to do something new and different, innovative. It's this creative discontent, I've heard it called before. And those two things combined has driven me to have a life of entrepreneurship. And at times I feel, well, at all times I feel completely free, to be honest. Many times I'm mired in the business and not working on it or growing as much as I would like, and I know I should be. And so there's ebbs and flows in that. As I made things even more difficult for myself, I set a goal to have 7 separate businesses that I start and run that all become EO qualifying at the same time at some point in my life. So I'm on this weird vision of how do I get to $7 million plus businesses that I start and operate concurrently. In parallel. And right now I'm at 2 of the 7. So I've got 2 businesses that fit that mark. But that creates just a lot of pressure. And I use that as this, if I can figure out how to do it, then there's so much that we'll learn from that. I will learn from that, that I'll be able to share with others for how to just build one. But I made it even harder the other day, a couple years ago, I decided also I wanted to be in 7 different countries. So now I want 7 different businesses that I start in 7 different countries that are all operating $1 million of revenue. I also have a business coach, and he tells me, you're insane and you need to focus. This is your problem. This is your challenge. You need to focus. And I'm embracing that focus this year a little bit more, last couple of years, actually. But I think if I can just build one at a time, then that's my focus. So I'm on number 2. No, actually, I'm on number 3. I've got 2 there. One at a time is the focus I need, but I can still have that big goal of getting to 7 concurrently.
What is it about the number 7? 7 businesses, 7 countries. Is that your favorite number?
Oh, man. I can't remember where it came, but it did. It came in. I know exactly how it came. As I was practicing a lot of journaling, I was going through this framework that I do every time I journal, and I talk about things that motivate, things that are important in my that I love in work and in passion. There's like 3 different areas. Long story short, I wanted to create a statement that depicted where I wanted to be in those 3 areas. So with work, it was 7 ways. I just wanted 7 ways of doing anything and everything. I just thought that was a number. In family, it was 7 stays. I wanted to create 7 travel opportunities a year with my family. And with my personal life, it was 7 days. Every day I wanted to do the same thing, journal, workout, exercise. So I had this saying, 7 days, 7 stays, 7 ways. And then that 7 ways just kind of evolved so that take on a lot of different things in my work. And I picked a number of 7 when I decided how many businesses I wanted.
Wow. Okay. So 7 businesses that are all operating at $1 million or more, and they're in parallel and they're in different countries. You've got 2 that are at that mark right now. We're working on the 3rd. At what point did you actually see yourself as a CEO, or do you, Joe, see yourself as a CEO of these businesses?
Oh, I am way too entrepreneurial to be a CEO, I think. I have a lot of friends that have made that transition from entrepreneur to CEO because they've had to. Their core business just got so big and the demands so different that they had to become that CEO, the chief executive officer. I think entrepreneurs are very much idea innovators, creators, disruptors. And I don't think those 2 things live together very well. A CEO, needs to have the ability to set a vision, build a team, execute on that vision with their team. But they're probably not taking as much risk as an entrepreneur. They're not as disruptive. It's a little more, planned out. They've got that opportunity. It's a much larger organization. And people look for different traits and characteristics with a CEO that they don't look for in a founder. And I'm the founder personality, and I get bored easily. Once we get a business to scale, I just want to get out and let someone else scale it. I want to start the next new thing. My love is 0 to 1. But taking an idea from 0 to 1 million revenue and all of the challenges that exist to do that it is harrowing to be able to do that. And it's the least profitable and least compensated time to be in charge of a business, that 0 to 1. But that's what drives me and motivates me.
Interesting. So what do you think are some of the differences between when people think of a traditional CEO, a Fortune 500 CEO versus a small or mid-sized business CEO? What are some of those differences?
Well, I think a CEO is going to find a plane, steer and ship, and an entrepreneur or a founder is kind of building the plane on the way down, you know, building the ship, you know, plugging the holes of the raft. I think there's just big differences there. We're starting something. We're figuring it out as we go. We don't really know what the right answers are. Sometimes we're trying new things constantly. It's not a proven process yet, or proven system, or proven business model. And so there's just so much iteration. And honestly, founders drive the business from their energy and inspiration. That's what people are attracted to. That's what gets employees engaged. They put in the extra work. They figure it out together. And CEOs, you know, much more hierarchical, you know, needing to have that same vision, the same big picture thinking, the same drive and motivation. I mean, very type A people, but they've invested in getting results differently. And I think they're, one person can do both, but I don't see the traits very common in a single person.
No, why do you think that the traits aren't very common in a single person?
I think what makes you successful as an entrepreneur and founder and running a small business would make you unsuccessful in a corporate setting. I just think the consistency, the discipline, the politics, some of those things that you need to have as a good CEO don't exist inside of a small business owner often. A lot of times small business owners have left the corporate environment to start their own because they just wanted to be different. They didn't want to be corporate. They didn't want the structure and the controls in place. And that doesn't mean they don't start valuing that later as they grow their company, because those things are important. But I just think they're different types of people.
At what point do you think a business owner or founder earns the right to call themselves a CEO?
Yeah, I think, you know, when does a CEO earn the right to call themselves an entrepreneur? I would flip the question. I think it's suggestive that that's a thing you want to necessarily aspire to. And I don't want to aspire to be known as a CEO. I consider myself a founder or business owner. But I do think there is a threshold in your business where you have to, as businesses evolve, the leaders need to evolve, and or you need to replace the leader. So there's a certain leader that is good at founding a business. There's another business that's good at probably leader that's good at scaling it, and there's a third leader who's the CEO, who I see is probably good at maintaining it and growing it at very large scale. And that leader, there's a threshold in every business that person, if they're going to stay in leadership, needs to become that CEO to be able to call themselves a CEO. And I do think it's size and both revenue and people that needs to happen, not necessarily any other mindset shift.
Yeah. When we think about a founder growing towards that CEO role, what are some of those skills or attributes that founder needs to develop in order to grow into a CEO?
I think CEOs, in my experience, are very disciplined leaders. You know, they're very consistent leaders, and they're very good at developing talent and delegating work. And those are things that are important for founders and small business owners as well. But the elite CEOs that I can think of, they show up every day. They're super consistent in their messaging. They build world-class teams. They have high expectations of those teams. They let those teams execute. They make sure they have the support. And they're constantly setting the vision, keeping it simple, and steering that ship. And there are variations of that that also need to exist at the founder level and the small business owner, mid-sized business owner. But you really have to hone and craft those skills to get to that CEO level.
And I feel like delegation is a huge area of opportunity for so many, you know, founders, business owners, but also developing talent. That's not something that comes easy to a lot of small business owners.
Yeah, I mean, developing talent's hard. It's especially when you're strapped for time. That's one of the things that is you know, it's on the high importance, low urgency quadrant often, and it just doesn't get addressed by many small businesses. And it's up to the individuals in those businesses to go seek those opportunities to develop. And certainly a good founder or business owner is going to support those opportunities and bring those opportunities, but they don't really have the infrastructure and the system in place to have that part of the business in the same way that corporate America does. And you start at a corporate job from day one, you're looking at your career path and development opportunities, and it's built into that business as it should be. It's just not the infrastructure just not there for many small business owners to be able to do easily.
Sure. As small business owners are growing, and I love the framework you offered. There's the founder, there's someone who's helping them scale, and then there's the CEO. So, you know, three tiers of leadership here. But as these small business owners are working through those tiers, how do they start deciding when to add C-suite roles to the business? And what C-suite roles are the right roles to start to add?
I love that question because I think it's changed so much in the recent years with the advent of fractional. You know, I'm a fractional CMO business owner. I get this space really well. I've been in it for 8+ years. I think a startup can add a fractional C-level executive from day one, not just to the advisory board, but to the actual operations of their business as a leadership role that wasn't ever available up until the idea of fractional. So what we see now is that there are thousands and thousands of C-suite executives that have left corporate world to do consulting of some sort, and they've been attracted to this fractional model, which is not consulting. It's true executive-led of leadership inside of an organization, but sharing that between multiple companies and not just one as a full-time person. And because of that, the price point to engage a fractional leader is low enough where a small business owner and even a startup can get access to this C-level expertise. And it's really a leadership access more than anything else. It's somebody who's been there, done that, can lead and build alongside the other owners and leaders in the organization. So it's much sooner than it used to be.
And that's very helpful because a lot of times as a founder, you're making all these decisions by yourself and you're making decisions in areas of the business that you might not have a lot of expertise or knowledge in.
Yeah. And as I've been in the entrepreneurship for, 25+ years now, and the biggest resource for me up until recently, or still is the biggest, one of the biggest resources for me, is peer groups. So I'm a member of EO, the Entrepreneurs Organization. There's Vistage, there's McKay in Canada. There's lots of different peer groups out there where entrepreneurs and founders can learn from each other. And that is spectacular. And if there's a small business owner that's not tapping into a peer group, that's a big missed opportunity. But now there's fractionals, which is a whole nother area of expertise that a business owner can tap into that didn't exist before. So now I'm not just learning from peers, I can learn from and engage with an executive leader who's been there, done that, and can bring a ton of value very quickly to my organization.
Yeah. What are some of the challenges, Joe, you have faced as you've grown your fractional CMO business around developing talent? And how did you overcome those challenges?
That's a good question. So when you think about our business, we have kind of two talent pools. We have our CMOs and their senior leaders that have been in the workforce for 30+ years, and this is a way for them to go out on their own, but not alone. But they bring a lot of expertise with them. And frankly, they don't need a lot of development in their discipline. I mean, they're really good CMOs, but where there's a deficiency or where they need development are in areas that they've never focused on before. And for us, it's business development. So we're taking these marketing leaders who are great at marketing everybody else but themselves and trying to teach them the disciplines of how do you grow your practice? Because you're now no longer working in a W-2 environment with a traditional development path. You have to learn new skills. You have to learn how to build relationships, how to network, how to prospect. So it's almost starting at like ground zero for some of these people. And that's really hard when, you know, you're an old dog learning new tricks, right? So that's one area of talent that we have to develop, which is very different. And then we have our internal team. We have our coordinators and our admin team, and that's more traditional. And we have a decentralized team. We outsource people from the Philippines and from Mexico. And developing outsourced talent is also a very interesting challenge, but exciting for me because it's an opportunity to develop talent at scale where you have to do things slightly different because they're remote, not internal. And we do that through different ways, a very self-directed and then peer kind of feedback to promote areas where the CMOs in this case need development in certain areas from our coordinators. And so we have a peer review as well as an internal kind of personal review that sets the development opportunities for each of our individual internal team members.
I know some leaders believe it's very difficult to develop talent virtually, or they got to be in the office in order for you to develop talent. How have you overcome that and thought differently to develop talent remotely?
I think it's certainly easier to do anything in person for the most part, but it's not always practical or scalable to do it that way. It is hard. And it's hard because it's different, because the resources that exist to develop talent have been built to do it in-house, not virtually. So you have to seek out other providers, other ways of doing it. And we do a lot of virtual kind of workshops internally to work, but that doesn't feel as good as being in person and doing workshops. So now we have made at least on our leadership team, we've made an effort to get in person 3 times a year so we can have our development that way. Whereas throughout the year, it's virtual and hybrid. That's helped, you know, finding ways and reasons to do some in-person work in conjunction with the virtual work. But it's not everybody learns the same either. You know, we know that about each other. So online learning doesn't work for everybody. In-person mm-hmm. learning works better for some. How do you do in-person learning when everybody's remote? It's very difficult. Mm. Yeah.
I appreciate that you said it's hard because it's different. And I think that moment right there is so important for our listeners to hold on to, because it is different, and that sometimes requires us to think about it differently, to, as you mentioned, seek out different resources. So it doesn't mean it doesn't work. It's just hard and it's different.
Yeah. Yeah. Different is hard for sure.
Right. Okay. Let's go back. You were talking about developing CMOs and how they're really great at their craft, but you need to teach them how to network, how to prospect, how to grow their practice, business development. And I think the same is true for some founders and small business owners. They might have a wonderful idea, or they're really great at what they do, but if they don't know how to get clients, they don't have a business. So what are some practical tips you can offer our listeners around prospecting, networking? What's worked really well for you?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's almost like teaching them how to be entrepreneurs, because the traditional entrepreneur, and one of my favorite all-time books for entrepreneurship is The E-Myth. And it talks about the technician, maybe a plumber or baker in the case of that book, that is tired of working for corporate, thinks they can do it better, so goes out and starts their own craft, their own business as a plumber or electrician or what have you. And then they realize that in order to, you know, now that they have their own worst boss ever, it's themselves. And so they have to figure out how to build some systems and processes, and then hire a manager and then hire people. And then eventually go from working in the business to on the business to growing the business. It's the same thing for our CMOs. They go out and they want to do marketing on their own, fractional CMO work, but they find out that they can't grow that and enjoy doing the work and also grow their practice. So they have to figure out how to put the systems and processes in place to scale. They have to bring in support and team so they can do more of the things that they love. And our CMOs love strategy. They don't love tactics. And then to grow, they've got to make sure they can continue to develop their teams and recruit the right people. We, as a franchise organization, solve a lot of the systems and process and people side of it, but then they have to figure out how to grow the business. And growing the business is a skill set in itself. And I think every great entrepreneur is a natural salesperson or has learned sales. Like, I wouldn't have considered myself a natural salesperson, but I read several books early in my career. I took a sales job and I figured out how to do it. And those are the things that we have to teach our CMOs and business owners, any entrepreneur, anybody that goes out, that's the first thing they find out is, oh my God, I got to go sell some work, or I got to sell this job to this recruit for half what he or she could make on the fair market, or I've got to go sell a partner to kind of come in and give me some money. Like, you've got to always be in this sales mode. And that's hard for all of us. Most people don't like to sell or feel salesy is kind of a sleazy word. But when you start to realize how to do it, get really confident and comfortable in it, then you start to reap those rewards of being free to do what you want, to spend more time with your family. I mean, those things that drive me, I get once I've figured out how to build that organization.
Yeah. Sounds like it's a mindset shift in learning to embrace sales versus resist sales.
Yeah. Yeah. And for marketers, it's really hard because they've grown up alongside sales for so long, sales and marketing. And if they were good at sales, they probably would be in sales instead of marketing. So it's especially difficult, I think, for marketers.
Yeah. Well, thinking like a CEO can be something that you never truly turn off. I mean, you've got a goal to build 7 businesses. I'm sure you're always thinking about business. How is that helpful as a business owner? And how does that hinder you as a business owner?
Yeah, well, to have that many ideas and that much energy and to be turned on all the time with just the next thing, next idea is very invigorating. It creates a ton of energy. Like, creativity is the highest level of energy, and it's intoxicating and it's contagious, and people around you are naturally drawn to that. So it's super helpful to have that level of energy and that many ideas and that kind of concentrated ball of fire that you can grow any business or idea around. But then it also can be very distracting. And that's where my coach continues to remind me, like, you need to focus to execute on these ideas, to take them to that next level and not get distracted by the next one, the next one, the next one. Because the distraction then starts to kind of lead to half-finished projects. And it's okay to test and try new things, but sometimes people get worn out in your own team from all the tests and all the trials. And like, certain people can handle it and other people get drained by it. And then it becomes kind of a negative aspect of an entrepreneur or innovator. So knowing that and being aware of it and trying to figure out when to lead with ideas and when to lead with focus, that's the challenge I'm working on right now myself. You know, 30 years later, after becoming an entrepreneur, I'm still working on it.
What are you doing to work on that challenge of lead with ideas, lead with focus, know when to do which one?
The biggest thing that I'm doing is trying to make sure that I say no to the things that don't really fit the core business that I'm focused on right now. So all my focus and energy currently is around growing the fractional CMO business. We have a couple thresholds, a couple milestones that I'm going after, and I'm focused there. But we started an AI department a year ago. We're selling tons of AI agents, and that is like could become a business of itself one day. That's exciting. That's where my energy lies. I love talking about AI, but I got to make sure that it keeps feeding the core business. We're building AI agents to support CMOs growing the practice, to support CMOs adding more value to their clients. Like, so I can mold the opportunity to continue to support the core business that I'm looking at right now. I'm restraining myself from starting any new idea that's outside the core. And that's the focus. So it puts a little, dampeners on or a little blinders on a bit, but I can still tap into that creative energy as long as it focuses on the area that I'm trying to grow.
Makes sense. Well, Joe, this has been such a fun conversation, and I love how you've brought a fresh perspective to the Think Like a CEO series and helping us understand some of the nuances and differences between a traditional corporate Fortune 500 CEO and a founder and a business owner who's thinking like a CEO and growing towards the CEO. You mentioned earlier in our conversation journaling. So I wouldn't be surprised if you answer this question with the journal practice again, but there might be something else you want to share with us. So I'm gonna ask it anyways. What habits or routines have been most critical in your journey to elite achievement?
That's a great question. I will say that, you know, I do look for opportunities to journal. I try to journal every day. I don't, but I try. But where the other habit that is super beneficial to me is meditation. And I had the unfortunate opportunity to experience a cancer diagnosis about 8 years ago. I had a squamous cell carcinoma in my forehead. You can sometimes see the little slight dampener there where it was pulled out. They took a quarter-sized tumor out of my eyelid and my forehead. It was right there. And long story short, I'm healthy. I'm good. It's cleared up. It's gone. But it also had invaded the nerve, and I had this neural invasion. And when my doctor told me about the neural invasion, he said, the problem with cancer, when it touches a nerve, it's like a highway and the cancer can spread. He said, I think we got it. And it turns out they did get it. But that forever changed my life. That moment that he said it could spread, we need to put you on a watch for the next 5 years. You could potentially go through some preventative prophylactic radiation if you wanted to. And at that moment, I was in distress. I was slightly depressed. I didn't know how to handle the news and the everyday looking in the mirror, wondering if it was spreading. I went to see a counselor. And one meeting with the counselor, he explained to me that, you know, you're living, you're currently in a state of fight or flight, and you're at this high level, and you can't last forever at that level. You need to bring yourself down 3, 4, 5, 6 times a day. And you can do that through reading, listening to music, working out, and meditating. And I started learning about meditation. And at first, meditation sounded daunting to me. I got to sit in an Indian style mode, and I got to put my, you know, thumbs out and fingers together, and I got to do it for 60 minutes, and there's no way. But after like studying it, doing it, practicing it, I realized that I can meditate for 10 seconds with one breath. I can meditate for a minute, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. I can meditate for an hour. For me, the idea that I can just take 30 seconds to reset myself by focusing my breath, sharing a mantra. I have one mantra that I talk about all the time. I am creative. Today, I'm creating a better tomorrow. I have plenty of time. That's my mantra. So anytime I feel stress, anxiety, I just sit and think through and breathe that mantra, and I reset, I'm ready to go. So that's the one thing that I can do throughout the day, any day, all day, anytime. And it's so helpful to just have that piece. So meditation, but it's only a minute. It's not necessarily an hour for me.
I appreciate your vulnerability, and thank you for sharing the story with us. And I'm so glad you're good and okay. And I can absolutely understand how anxiety driven that situation was. And I can't agree with you more about the power of meditation. And I know I used to think I was doing it wrong, because of course, when you sit down and you try to get quiet, your brain just ping pongs. Yes. And, you know, I'm thinking of my grocery list, my to-do list, what to say to this client. And I had to learn that's part of the journey, and that's okay. You're probably never going to be totally silent in your mind. The challenge is to not attach to those thoughts and go further. You just kind of let them pass, and then you get back to either your mantra or your breathing or whatever type of meditation you're doing. And I personally like to use meditation in the middle of my day. If I have several clients back to back, I'll take 5 minutes, lay on the floor. I put on a Peloton app meditation. I love it. It's easy, and I can track it, because of course the type A achiever in me likes to track how many meditations I do. And you get that ooey gooey feeling, and you totally reset, and you get up, and I feel very energized and I'm ready to go for my next meeting. And so I think meditation is incredible and it's free and you can do it anywhere.
Yeah, I really enjoy it. I have the Calm app that I use once in a while. The 10-minute guided meditations are terrific. Yeah.
Well, Joe, thank you so much for your time today and for sharing your energy and excitement around being an entrepreneur and your thoughts and perspectives around thinking like a CEO.
Well, thank you, Kristen. I really enjoyed our conversation and letting me be vulnerable and real and share with your listeners. And thank you for what you do. It's very important.
Appreciate that. Until next time, elite achievers, celebrate your wins, reflect on your lessons, and consistently show up with the mindset and habits that will elevate your success. Remember, progress is made one step at a time.